Hello and welcome to Bite Back Chats Books. This week, we're travelling across the Atlantic and all the way to the doors of the White House with our latest author, Annie Bracken. Before moving to the UK, Annie was George H.W. Bush's assistant during his presidency, and her book is packed full of colourful memories of life on his staff, from playing tennis with Pete Sampras to managing the internship programme. She's got a lot of stories to tell, so without further ado, welcome Annie.
So, Annie Bracken, welcome to the Bite Back Virtual Podcast.
Thank you very much. Great to be here, Vicky.
Well, thank you for coming on. And we're very excited because your book is all about, well, it's titled How to Break into the White House. So let's get started and delve into it. Can you just tell us a little bit about what the book is about?
Absolutely. Well, I was very lucky because I was born and raised in Indiana in the Midwest of America, and the White House is completely unattainable if you're from the Midwest. But I happened to know President Bush from when I was a little girl, and I went to the LSE and got a degree in international relations. And at that time, George Bush had become president. So I thought, well, I might as well go to Washington and try my luck. And I never contacted him, and he wouldn't have given me a job anyway. But I started out at the office of the senior senator from Indiana, and the senators like to hire people from their states. So I was a constituent, and even though I had a university and a graduate degree, he hired me to answer the phones. But I kept circling the White House literally by walking by, and I kept sending letters. And eventually I got an interview, and it's a long process. The White House is very, very small, and there are very few people that actually work there that aren't the big wigs, that aren't the president, the vice president, the security council. And the burnout factor is very, very high because you have no personal life. And somebody burnt out and there was an opening, and I got my foot in the door that way. Only after I was hired did the president realize that I was there and that he knew me.
God, so it's quite a journey for you then, from Indiana all the way to Washington. What was it like growing up in Indiana then? What did people who lived there think of, like, the government and people that lived in the White House?
People in Indiana, and I love people from Indiana, and I love it that I'm from Indiana, don't pay much attention to what goes on beyond Indiana. I basically grew up on a farm. I went to school with children of farmers and children of factory workers. And unless the government really has some involvement in your personal life, you really ignore it. Now, Trump has really struck a chord with the Midwest, and especially Indiana, because he's anti-immigration, pro-gun, pro-gold, pro-religion, and Indiana is very, very conservative. And it's always going to be a Republican state. So it's always going to be what you would think of as conservative. But most people don't know what's going on beyond their town. And I grew up in Muncie, which probably has about 30,000 people. Now there's a university there, which makes it bigger. But outside of Muncie, Indianapolis, which is the capital of Indiana, is about as far as anyone from Muncie is going to know or care about. But reading the newspaper or watching the news was certainly not something I did growing up in Indiana.
So what made you different then? What made you want to try and strike out beyond Indiana?
Oh, well, I was very, very lucky that when I was a little girl, so when I was 4, 5, and 6, my father, who was an attorney in Muncie, got a job because he had worked on the what's called the advance team for Richard Nixon. The advance team goes to, let's say Richard Nixon was going to a campaign rally in Detroit. My father, through my uncle, who I talk about in the book, got to be a part of the advance team for President Nixon. So went and kind of scoped out Detroit before Richard Nixon got there. And the senior person on the advance team was the governor from Alaska, Walter Hickel. And when Nixon was elected president, Nixon made him the Secretary of the Interior. So that's like the Minister of the Environment. And he had gotten to know my dad. So he offered my dad a job as a junior lawyer in the Department of Interior. And we moved to Washington. This was in the very early 70s. And we moved into a home that was right next door and almost connected, not exactly connected, but almost connected to the then congressman from Texas, George Bush Sr. So I knew him. Now, his older sons, George W. and Jeb, had gone to college. So they were gone. But he and Barbara, and they had three other children, Neil, Marvin, and Dorothy, were home. I knew him from being a little girl growing up next door to him. From that, I went back to Muncie, and I have always then been interested in politics. So I realized from an early age that there was more than Muncie, that there was more outside of the little bubble of Indiana. And I wanted to experience that, but it wasn't until he became president that I thought, yeah, I haven't spoken to him since I was 5 or 6, but why not go and see if I can rekindle that relationship with the man who taught me how to play tennis, actually. And I can't knock on the door and say, do you remember me? But maybe I can. He becoming president gave me the goal of saying, you know what? I think maybe since I know the president, I can go and work in the White House. Now, it's not that easy. It's really, really hard. But that gave me the idea. But I just thought it would be extremely exciting to go and experience politics.
It must have been quite a shock for the president when he realized who you were.
He had known that I was in Washington because I as I said, I befriended everybody I could that worked in the White House. And I ended up, which I talk about in the book, but I don't mention any names, dating a 7-foot-tall redhead who was the deputy director of policy. And he took me to a White House Christmas party. And at that stage, the president said, oh my goodness, Annie Bracken. You mean Annie Bracken from Palisade Road? Yes, sir, it's me. And I'm in Washington and I'm working for Senator Lugar. Oh, well, that's nice. You know, and then I moved along because these receptions, you keep moving along. But that gave him the recognition factor that I was in Washington. That was the first step. But he never had anything to do with me being given the job. And he really didn't have anything to do with those that were given jobs in the White House other than the vice president, the counsel, the, you know, national security advisor.
In that case, then once you'd gotten the job, you made it into the White House. Yeah, what was it like working and being the assistant to the president?
My role, supposedly, Vicky, was special assistant to the president for presidential personnel. That was what I was hired as. And basically, with each president, there are 3,000 jobs in Washington and in the world, this includes ambassadorships, that are filled by whoever's president. So that includes the cabinet, so the Secretary of State, all of his staff, Secretary of Commerce, all of his staff, all the ambassadors. But total, it's 3,000 jobs, including my job. My job was part of that 3,000 jobs. So I was hired to help sift through all the resumes for those jobs. And what is required is you've got to have voted for the president. You have to be squeaky clean. You've got to be confirmed by the Senate. Now, I wasn't confirmed by the Senate because I was too lowly. But for the ambassadors and for the Supreme Court justices, sure. We just went through that. And the cabinet secretaries, they've got to be confirmed by the Senate. So it's quite a process. And so the presidential personnel staff was, I would say there were maybe seven of us. I was the most junior, sifting through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of resumes, trying to come up with someone who would fit the bill. So that was what I was hired to do. But in actuality, and I did do that, but in actuality, once you get into the White House complex, which is so secure that you have to have a top security clearance, there are not very many people that are there. And other than the people that are running the world and their secretaries who can't leave their desk, there were little people like me who had access everywhere, but I wasn't important enough to have to be in one place. So once I got there, I befriended everybody because I could. I was part of the complex. And I ended up being given tasks that weren't part of what I was hired to do. And the president, who's a fitness man, recognized me because I was in the complex. So I ended up running with the president three times a week, which was very surreal because I'd have to get there about 4:30 in the morning. And then we would go with the Secret Service, not running behind us, but driving behind us. And that was along what's called the mall. I played tennis with the president whenever he needed a partner, which could be at any time during the day.
You did say that in your book that he laid out a lady in the crowd because he was too enthusiastic with his
hitting. That was golf.
He did.
He laid out a lady in the crowd. And one story I can tell you, I don't think I have it in the book, was that he was at, I won't name the person, but an ambassador's home. And the ambassador had an ornamental pool full of koi. And they, if some person approached, they'd come to the surface because they thought they were being fed. But the president decided to go fishing in the koi pond. And the ambassador couldn't believe it when he saw the president go to the koi pond with his fishing rod and come out with a handful of, you know, domestic pets, basically. But the president, I mean, was such a great person and man. And he had a nickname, which was Have Half. So in other words, you know, if he was eating a sandwich and you said, golly, that looks good, he'd say Have Half. He always wanted to share things. But he was quite hyperactive as far as a sportsman. And on the tennis court, as on the golf course, as in fishing, he wasn't great at anything because he just wanted to do things too fast. But yes, so I played tennis, went running. The intern program was nothing much, and they weren't paid. They could only be in the White House for 3 months, but they weren't in the White House, which is another subject, the whole Monica Lewinsky thing. That was actually a felony for her to even be in the West Wing because they don't have the top security clearance. There's another building next to the West Wing called the Old Executive Office Building, which used to be the Department of War. And that houses a lot of the staff. And that's where the interns are because sure. They're not allowed in the White House ever, 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 ever. They don't have the clearance. I was in The Hague when Monica Lewinsky was on the scene because that was during the Clinton administration. But the intern program was nothing much, and it was the kids of wealthy donors. A lot of politics is run by money. It just is. So our American ambassadors, most of them, including the recent ambassador here, the American ambassador here, was a great friend and contributor to Donald Trump. Mm. And that's how our ambassadors are chosen. Now, I ended up marrying, who I only say the Brit, but the British ambassador in Washington. And he, of course, earned his way in the diplomatic corps and through the Foreign Office. So he takes great offense at the fact that America uses the ambassadorships as political payoffs. But that's what America does. And that's what I was doing, was helping to give people that were owed some job, a job, because they worked for the president on the campaign, or they gave money to the president for campaigning purposes. Anyway, so the interns, it was the same. They were children of political contributors. And so I took them, I was in charge of them, and I made them, actually it was great. It was great fun for me. I had a new batch every 3 months. And I made them do things that were usually done by the Navy, because the Navy runs the White House, which was setting up for state dinners, setting up for arrival and departure ceremonies when the president left in the Marine One helicopter to go anywhere. He would leave from the South Lawn, and there would be people that would watch. So chairs were set up, ropes put around. I had the interns set up for when Queen Elizabeth came to speak. And she came, and the chief of protocol didn't realize she was as short as she was, neither did I. And so when she was speaking, she was not seen, and only her hat was seen. I was in charge of setting up and taking away. So I had the intern program, which again led me to do things that I would not do if I was just sifting through resumes, which was great. And another thing I did was get furniture, literally get furniture for the president, the vice president, the national security advisor, because they didn't like the decor of their office, but the government's not going to pay to go out and buy a new sofa for the White House. So I would get the Navy to go to their vast storerooms. Because other than the White House, there are 12 different cabinet departments, which have 100,000 employees. Now, these are all civil servants. And so there's a great storehouse of furniture. And I would go with the Navy to pick out a sofa for the National Security Advisor. And just different errands that I guess I turned out to be the person that everyone in the White House turned to do small things, but things that were really useful. And by doing that, I met everybody in the White House, everybody that came to the White House, everybody that guarded the president. It was just, it was wonderful, but it was going way outside of what I was paid to do. And I was paid really nothing. You never want to work in the White House or in fact in government if you want to earn money in America, because that it's not a money-making position. But the experience is, I mean, I could never, I've met everybody in the world, basically.
You do say that you meet some very exciting people, like Bon Jovi for one and Joe Biden for the other. Like, who was your favorite person that you met in the White House?
Well, that's really hard to say. I mean, John Bon Jovi, good gracious. How I met Bon Jovi and how I met Eric Clapton was I gave the White House tours for any VIP who wanted a White House tour. The public can see some rooms of the White House, and that's done by the Navy. And those are the reception rooms. But to go behind the rooms you see on TV, you need someone in the White House to do that. So John Bon Jovi and Eric Clapton and a number of other people I gave tours to. And that was really interesting. Joe Biden, I met while working on Capitol Hill because he was very good friends with Senator Lugar, who I was working for. Such a nice man, and had a really tragic life. And I think everybody knows about his wife that died and his child who died. He's been there for 50 years. But who I really loved was Jim Baker, who was the Secretary of State. I would say he was probably my favorite person because he had worked for Reagan as Chief of Staff. He was extremely good friends with the president. And I thought President Bush was the president, but it was because of Baker that the Soviet Union collapsed, I think. I love Secretary Baker because he was the face of the foreign policy. And I think that the foreign policy of the George Bush senior administration was its shining glory. And I love the president. I love the president. The president adopted me. He really did. And he lost his second term to Bill Clinton. And everybody knows that was, I think, a real surprise, because he was so popular after Desert Storm. And I had gone to The Hague at that point. The American ambassador, who I have not named, was acting up. I don't think I really said much about that in the book. But he had founded Pizza King, and he was from Wichita, Kansas. So very wealthy. And he was single and was a motorcycle rider. So he went around The Hague on a motorcycle with Dutch prostitutes. I'm sorry. I mean, that's just the truth. And the president said to me, I have got to send you over there to basically keep an eye on this guy. You be his, because he didn't have a wife. I was his special assistant, but I was his hostess because he didn't have a wife. He had a girlfriend who I became very good friends with, who flew in and out of Los Angeles, but he was not upholding the United States well. And so the president sent me there, and I was given that position to go and try to get the ambassador in line. It wasn't a chapter in the book because I didn't want to make the book too long, and just, I hope I didn't offend anybody. I didn't want to. I wanted to only say good things and especially not mention any names. Because I really don't have anything bad to say about the people that I met. However, there were a lot of bad things that did go on. And the ambassador in The Hague was not behaving like an ambassador should. So I was sent to try and sort things out a little bit.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think there's so much we could talk about. Like, we haven't even gotten to your life after the White House, but unfortunately we're only a half hour podcast. So I feel like I have time for one more question, which is, what's your advice for people starting out in the White House, like starting a career in the White House?
Well, first of all, completely forget about any social life, because you're on call 24/7, and you literally are. It's called the signal, White House signal. So the president can pick up the phone, any phone, call the operator and say, call Annie Bracken. And it doesn't matter what time of day, what night, and that's your priority. Also, you can't talk to anybody outside of the security bubble. So dating was extremely hard for me because, first of all, I didn't have any time. Second of all, it had to be someone that I could talk to about what was going on. So inevitably, the characters that I mentioned in the book work in the White House. And at the end of the day, I don't mention this in the book, but everything you work on is burned. Now, that's not everything, because there are top security clearance files, et cetera, but everything I worked on, so any memo, anything that was physical was burned. You put it in what's called a burn bag, and the Secret Service takes it at the end of the day. But that's the downside. The upside is you're never ever going to get the exposure to kings and queens. I mean, these are people that came through there. Anybody who was anybody would come through the White House at some stage. And inevitably, if you're there, you meet that person. The minds of the people that I worked with, some were absolutely brilliant. Some of the men that I dated were so brilliant that they were as odd as anything you can ever imagine outside of the White House. I describe one of my old boyfriends as being brilliant, but then a date with him would be sitting at a table of 20, a dining room table for 20 people. And we'd sit at either end and eat egg salad sandwich. But that, no, seriously.
And that's some, you know, that's another issue. But what I would say to anyone coming to work for the White House now, if part of Joe Biden's team, say, it is absolutely magical and fascinating, but it requires all your strength and all your stamina and all your attention. I have such great memories and great experiences that have gotten me to where I am today, which is a pretty great place.
Yeah, and I think that's a really nice note to wrap up the podcast on, I think. So thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much, Vicky. It was great talking to you. Okay.
Thanks for listening to another Bite Back podcast. If hearing Annie's tales of life in the White House intrigued you, then why not head on to bitebackpublishing.com and see for yourself? Her book, How to Break into the White House, is out now. And don't forget to like and subscribe. Until next time.